James Corbett, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us what your take is on what's happening with the economy. Certainly, is the world economy contracting? Certainly, why is the price of gold dropped, I don't know, something like $50 or $70 in the last 30 days? What in the world is going on?
Well, I think it's important for people to keep in mind that gold prices are not reflective of the worth of gold because of the manipulations. So what we really have to do is take a look at the ups and downs to see basically which way gold is heading, but not really to think too much in terms of the value of gold in terms of these paper dollars. So in that regard, we're in the middle of a 13-month cycle in gold right now that is due to bottom in May. So we are likely to get another few months of downward pressure on the price of gold in dollar terms at any rate. And so that's going to continue for a few more months. And I am expecting we're going to be hearing a lot of the gold bull bears out there saying, oh, gold is a terrible investment. You don't want to get into that. But we have so much on the opposite, the flip side of that, that's pointing against that, that it's almost laughable, including the fact that it's 2012 turned out to be the biggest year for gold buying by central banks since 1964. So we are in the middle of what I am calling a silent gold rush, because as opposed to the gold rush back in the 1850s, what we're seeing here is not some big advertised gold rush where everyone's running to the running to California.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett, a financial analyst who writes his own newsletter, but he also writes for the International Forecaster. Since Bob Chapman has passed away, of course, James Corbett was one of the people he picked to carry on his legacy, and James writes a regular column for the International Forecaster Report, which is now coming out once again twice a week. And James is simply saying that the dramatic price decrease in the price of gold, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this past month, gold has just plummeted from 1670, 1680, down, I think it was at 1609 today. It's lost well over $70 in the last 30 days. But I think that James believes, as I do, this is a prelude to a great rush into gold. But right now, gold is probably one of the finest investments you could make. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I agree it is a good long-term investment, but I disagree that this is a prelude to a rush into gold. I think there is a rush into gold happening right now, into physical gold. What we're seeing right now is some deleveraging of some of the hedge funds from some of the gold EFTs, the paper gold, as they are trying to cover some of their positions that have lost money in recent years, including Apple and things like this that were seen as safe money that unfortunately has not turned out for the hedge funds. So they are deleveraging from their paper gold right now, and that's some of what we're seeing in this gold cycle as the prices are being driven down. But as I'm saying, I think the central banks themselves are belying what's really happening, and the fact that they bought more gold in 2012 than in any year since 1964 is a sign of something, and it's a sign that gold is very much still the base of all monetary wealth really out there, that's really backing up the actual wealth in the economy. And I think central bankers know that probably better than the average person on the street, which is why we're seeing such high demand. And we're also continuing to see very high demand in Asia and in India. For example, China is just back from their New Year's holiday, and they have just re-entered the markets on a record high. In fact, the Shanghai Gold Exchange is trading on record gold volumes over the past day, and India is now up to 18-month highs in gold imports. So big, strong support from Asia coming again into the gold markets, which shows once again that physical gold is still very, very much in demand by people on the street here in Asia and people in the know around the world. So I don't think that this is a problem for people who are investing in gold as a long-term asset. People, of course, who are trying to turn around money on gold may have lost $70 an ounce or whatever it is in the past month, but I don't think that's the outlook people need.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett. And James is simply saying that central banks are buying gold frantically. Certainly, people in Japan and China are buying gold. Certainly, So a number of countries have asked to have their gold repatriated. In fact, Germany several weeks ago asked the Fed to repatriate its gold, and the Federal Reserve System would not give Germany its gold, but only give part of its gold over a seven-year period. Netherlands is demanding to get its gold back. Venezuela is demanding to get its gold back. Countries and central banks throughout the world are trying to get their gold in hand. They don't want to leave it in New York City at the Federal Reserve. They don't want to leave it in London. The Germans wanted to get their gold back from France, and the Germans are frankly trying to build up their gold reserves because they know the devastating effect of inflation. Unfortunately, Americans don't, but Germany has been destroyed two or three times by inflation during this last century, the 20th century. They don't want to be left holding the bag once again. So they're trying to get their house of cards in order because they realize, of course, that fiat currencies always fail. It's not a matter of if, but when. Go right ahead, James.
Well, Germany is an important player in this because, as people probably know by now, it is really the industrial powerhouse of the Eurozone and is basically the underpinning of that Eurozone economy. And they are expecting to return to growth in Germany in the first quarter. The Bundesbank just yesterday came out to say that they're expecting 0.6%. They contracted by 0.6% in the final quarter of 2012, but they're expecting positive gains in 2013. But the economic minister of Germany just came out to say that Germany's economic health is very much dependent on the Eurozone in general. And that is, well, as we know, it's still very much a destabilized environment. And you have, for example, Italy's election is going to take place in the coming week. And it's still very much up in the air whether or not a clear winner will be decided in this election and if it will require another vote, which is spooking the markets a little bit. So we saw the Eurozone, some of the Eurozone stock indexes falling for the third straight day on Monday. So we have still got a lot to see through with this, and I think that there's still a lot of people who are expecting some interesting twists and turns this year. I think it's going to be very much an event-driven year in terms of what's going to actually be driving the markets on a day-to-day basis, and I think we are looking for some big turning points in terms of policy. Policy direction is still going to be what's going to be setting the agenda and making the headlines, as we saw, for example, with this new talk about currency war and the G20 and all of those types of shenanigans that are taking place in the foreign exchange markets.
Well, our telephone number, if you have a question or comment, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But basically, of course, I think that it's people have to understand that the economy of Europe is contracting. Certainly, if it were not for massive loans from the European Central Bank for Italy and for Greece and for Portugal and Spain, all of these countries would not be able to pay their bills. So where is the European Central Bank getting their money? They don't have an awful lot of money on their own. And basically, we don't know whether the Federal Reserve System is simply creating money and sending it over there. Everything is done in secrecy. Well, we do know that in the past, the Federal Reserve Board has created all sorts of money and sent it all over the world to keep the world fiat money system from collapsing. Where is the European Central Bank, James? Where is the European Central Bank getting the money, the massive amounts of money they're giving to Greece and to Spain and to Italy and Portugal?
The ECB is backed up by the individual central banks of the countries that comprise the Eurozone, so it is basically on the back of the Bundesbank and France and all of the other countries that contribute to it, and they contribute their money to a pot in when we look at things like the EFSF and the ESM. So there are different mechanisms by which they're insuring the markets, and they've already, as you say, guaranteed loans to places like Ireland and Spain and Italy. And it's the underlying idea that Draghi is committing the ECB to basically back up as much quantitative easing as the markets need. That just that him saying that last year has really helped the markets and drive down the bond prices, because again, it's just this idea, exactly like in the Fed QE idea, that they can just print as much money as the markets need. So that's stabilized the market situation somewhat, but as we know, it's just all based on paper promises. So I think we have the exact same thing underlying the European economic situation right now as we do the American, which is, again, just paper promises and policy decisions that are supposedly going to be backing everything up and making sure that nothing will collapse or nothing will crash. And again, it's not even worth the paper that it's printed on. So and it's a question of the public really starting to question that system, because as long as the public believes in it, it actually has reality. And that's kind of the strange thing about the way the markets work. It's all about perceptions, and it's all about what people know and when they know it. And I think the smart money knows that this is on the downward trend. And that's why, for example, as I say, central banks have bought the most gold in 2012 as they have since 1964. It's because they know that this is coming to an end. This is exactly what's coming with the repatriation movement in country after country, trying to get their gold reserves back into their physical possession. And that's why the Asian markets are exploding in terms of gold purchases. People know where the real money is, and it's not in these paper promises that the politicians keep making.
Well, we hear that George Soros has sold a lot of his paper assets isn't getting into gold. We hear that certainly Warren Buffett is selling a lot of stock, and we hear that certainly we don't know whether he's going into gold. We know that John Paulson, who heads one of the largest hedge funds in the world, is backing his position. Certainly anticipates that gold will go up. So far, he hasn't done very well, but he's been pretty correct in the past. What are the big boys doing? Not what the average little person, the people are manipulated by what their advisors tell them and what they read in the newspapers and magazines, all of which I personally believe is contrived and controlled. What are the really big boys doing? People who really know what's going on behind the scenes, who have certainly billions of dollars at their disposal.
Well, exactly as you indicate, people like George Soros, for instance, there were reports last year that he had unloaded basically all of his major financial investments in stocks and invested over $130 million in gold shares in the SBDR Gold Trust, and that was coming out in August of last year. Warren Buffett, on the other hand, says that civilized people don't buy gold, and his philosophy supposedly is to invest in productive businesses that create jobs and add something to the economy. So, for example, we just saw Berkshire taking over Heinz in a $23 billion deal that is going to see Warren Buffett now in direct control of the Heinz company, and which, of course, is the basis to John Kerry's family's wealth. So that's an interesting connection right there as Kerry starts to step into the role of Hillary Clinton as State Department head. So it is absolutely interesting some of those things happening. But there's a lot of the big boys are getting into gold. Others philosophically won't do that, supposedly. But I think, again, a lot of the smart money knows that it's not in the gold. Paper gold. It's not in the gold shares. It's not in the gold stock. It's in the gold itself. And I think that's where a lot of people are placing their long-term bets. And again, this isn't about trying to make money on the ups and down swings. This is about saving wealth for future decades or certainly the time after the time that we're living in right now.
Well, about a month or so ago, why Germany Central Bank had asked certainly the Fed to return a fairly substantial sum of gold. I forgot whether it was 1,700 ounces or 17,000 ounces, something like that. I guess 1,700 ounces of gold. And the American government wouldn't give it to them. They were going to have to wait something like 7 years. What is this all about? I mean, certainly you would think if somebody lends you something, you would have to give it back.
You would if you were taking good care of that thing that they had lent you, but maybe everyone out there has had the experience of having received a book or a CD or something from a friend, and then when they ask for it back, you realize, oh, I don't even know where that is. I'll get back to you on it. Unfortunately, the same thing happens in gold, insofar as the gold that's sitting there in the vaults is often tied up in it's actually used as leverage for further transactions. It's also lent out to other people In complex trades, of course, the physical gold still sits there in vaults in the Federal Reserve System or in Fort Knox or wherever the gold might actually be physically held. But it is contracted out in a number of different ways, and that is used as leverage in other financial transactions. So to actually physically give up the gold threatens, at least in certain systems, to actually destabilize that all of those transactions that the gold is already involved in. So it is it can be an extremely complex thing, and that is one of the real fears underlying this repatriation movement, that this is going to destabilize a lot of those transactions that are being backed up with this gold, even though it isn't physically or it doesn't. On the balance books, it doesn't actually belong to the people who are lending it out. As long as they physically have it in their possession, they can involve it in those types of trades. And this is kind of the dirty secret of what's going on with the central banks and their gold holdings, is that these are leveraged out and used in different financial transactions. And once that starts to collapse, and once the repatriation movement starts to catch on in more countries, I think we are going to see a massive collapse in a lot of those types of transactions where this gold is being used as the backing up of those types of transactions.
And I think people really don't understand. Banking is made intentionally complicated so that you won't really see what it is. And it's really sort of a scam. It's all an illusion. You have $1,000 in the bank, and the bank can lend that out 9 times or 9 or 10 times, something like that. They can lend that money out to 10 different people. You're $1,000. Well, you have the $1,000 in the bank, and it's fine as long as nobody wants to get that. You don't want to get your money back. When you want to get your money back, of course, that's where we get into problems. That's why it has to be backed by the federal government. But unfortunately, the federal government doesn't have any money to back it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. It's all an illusion. Go right ahead, Sidney James.
Well, we can actually trace some of this back years, even to the founding of the euro back around the turn of the millennium. And at that time, as it's just been revealed over the past few months, we didn't know about this before, but it's just been revealed that at that time, the Bundesbank in Germany repatriated about 1,000 tons of gold from the Bank of England's vaults. There were about 1,440 tons of gold that the Bundesbank was holding in London at the time. And they withdrew almost 1,000 tons of that and flew it back to Frankfurt, allegedly because the storage costs were too high. But this was coming at the exact time as the euro was coming into being, and I think Germany was very much hedging its bets at that time. So it shows once again that that really this is a house of cards, and that what is underlying it is the physical possession of the gold. And the Bundesbank and other banks are smart enough to know that. That's exactly why we're seeing this, as I call it, this silent gold rush that's happening right now. And as I say, we're in this 13-month cycle in gold right now that is likely to bottom out in May. So we are likely to see even further downward pressure on the prices of gold, the nominal prices in dollar terms. And I think of it as a buying opportunity. We're going to start seeing the gold bears coming out and saying what a ridiculous investment gold is and how it's losing money. But we're in the 13th year now of straight commodity increases in the value, the profit of gold. So I don't expect that that's going to come to an end this year. I think there's still incredible upside, and I think it's just the best long-term investment that one can make for storing value over long periods of time.
Well, the difficulty is that certainly there's only a very, very small percentage of the American people are really invested in gold. Most people, since they've been told over and over again by their friends, by their experts, by their advisors, that this is an archaic investment and that smart people don't invest in gold. After all, that the price may very well drop and drop dramatically, and then what'll happen? What do you say to them?
Well, this is exactly why I think the listeners to programs like these and the programs that I do and other such programs are the ones that are ahead of the curve. I don't really have anything to say to the people who hear this information and decide not to invest in gold. That's completely their decision, and I have no problem with that. But I think at least for myself, all I can say is what I do for myself and my family. And for myself, long-term holdings go into precious metals because I know that they're going to save their value. value. And the people who do know that and do understand that and do see what's happening on the markets will be able to position themselves and their family to ride out these economic storms that are coming, that are based on these paper promises that are going to disappear and vanish into thin air as easily as they were created from thin air. And as long as people understand that, then they are in a position to actually do something to hold on to the value of their wealth and to preserve it for their family and their loved ones. And it is a remarkably easy market to get into. It's not difficult. Even if you don't have the types of holdings to buy gold, you can still obviously buy silver. It's now trading under $30. And there's an even bigger potential upside to silver as it returns to its gold-silver ratio value. It's likely to break out even further than gold once gold actually starts breaking out. So it's an excellent long-term investment, and I think that people who know about this are going to be the ones who are going to be able to weather this economic storm. So it's not something where I think I feel I have to convince people about it. I'm just letting people know what's going on, and certainly it's up to them what they want to do with their wealth.
Hold that thought here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's James Corbett, who writes for the International Forecaster. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And James says that he believes gold is an excellent investment at this time. And if people simply want to go along with what their advisors and the other experts tell them, then that's their decision. It's not up to him. He can only tell you what he believes. And I think he's absolutely correct. I think that we're at the end of a fiat money cycle. There's no instance in all history, and this has been tried time and time and time again down through the ages, going on to a monetary system based upon paper, and basically, of course, it does very well for a time. But eventually it always collapses. It always has collapsed. It's been amazing. This one has lasted since, I think, the 15th of August, 1971, when Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard, and certainly America's still going. I mean, it looks like the same America we've always had. Yes, the Treasury's borrowing $1 trillion, over $1 trillion a year. And of course, certainly we're going to increase taxes. We increased the taxes on the wealthy. And what happened? Why? Immediately we gave $55 billion to the victims, or some of the victims of the Hurricane Sandy. Of course, a lot of the money went to Obama's friends, had nothing to do with Hurricane Sandy, but that doesn't matter. Certainly, the money's all gone, but that's all right. We'll just borrow more. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you're out in the audience. And you have a question for James. But of course, he believes that certainly at the present time that the price of gold is down and down dramatically. I think it was just looked up on the internet. It was 1609. It's been up certainly well over 18, moving towards $20, about $2,000 an ounce right now. It's 1609 an ounce, and certainly the price of silver is down. But this is a contraction, and my personal feeling, it's all manipulated by the people who create our reality. The dancing shadows on the wall of the cave, if you've ever heard my talk about the parable of the cave. Well, certainly our guest, James Corbett, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And what do you think is going to happen right at the present time? Certainly, the American economy, they keep telling us, Barack Obama keeps telling us, it's getting better. It's slow, but is it really getting better? Certainly, we find the price of the home seems to be going up. Cars seem to be selling. Isn't that an optimistic situation?
Well, it is certainly on the surface, and in the near term, it's a good thing for people who are holding those assets. But unfortunately, I think it is, again, just part of those paper promises, and it's backed up, as we can see most obviously, for example, with the QE3 that was announced last year, where the Fed is now pumping $40 billion a month into buying up mortgage assets, which again, it's just it's the exact same system whereby they are creating this money out of nothing in order to purchase some of these the riskier assets to take them off the books of the banks. And the idea is that the banks are going to start lending into the economy. But I think what we're seeing really is the beginning of a a new cycle in that dancing of the shadows on the wall. Again, we're still talking about the shadows rather than what's really happening behind the scenes. But in that shadow game, we can see that now the yuan, the Chinese yuan, is really being placed as a future potential successor to the dollar in terms of international exchange. And people just have to take a look at the charts of yuan-denominated trade settlements over the past few years. They've gone from almost a negligible value of under 10 million or 10 billion yuan traded settlements over in 2009 up to almost 1 trillion. It's hovering around the 900 billion yuan mark right now. And you have major purchasers like Tesco in Britain that are now doing their trades with China in yuan instead of being denominated in dollars or any other type of international currency. So we are seeing this global shift taking place, and it's happening largely behind the scenes, unless you're part of the purchasing department for Tesco or some of these big multinational corporations. You're probably not going to be noticing these types of things happening, but more and more of these bilateral trade deals are coming into view. And this is the type of thing that quietly behind the scenes is reshaping the economic landscape, the international financial landscape. And it's the type of thing, again, the average American on the street isn't seeing on a day-to-day basis, but they will feel one day when that has a significant enough effect and starts to change the way that that settlements are being calculated. And it as I've been saying before, we're not likely to see a collapse of the dollar as that world reserve until there is a viable alternative in its place. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now behind the scenes, as the dollar is being chipped away at little by little by little, and suddenly the 96 or 97% of it, the value of the dollar that's been lost since the Federal Reserve came into being 100 years ago, is going to be felt all at once by a country that suddenly...
I know it's 1-888-24 Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24 Liberty. 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. And before we go on, James, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster publication, how they could subscribe to it, and how they get in touch with your publication as well.
Absolutely. Well, if people are interested in the International Forecaster, again, it's coming out twice a week, every Wednesday and Saturday. It's being published as an e-newsletter. People can find out more information about it at theinternationalforecaster.com, where they can also find some of the articles that are published there, and you can find out how to subscribe. Also, if you're interested in subscribing, you can not only go to theinternationalforecaster.com, you can also write in at P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. And if people are interested in my own work, that's at CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And that's where I have all of my podcasts and interviews and articles and videos available for free download. And I hope people will check it out and use it as an information resource.
All right, fine. Well, certainly my concern is that there could very well be a move to replace the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Of course, this happens when, of course, the central bank of the United States just keeps printing money without any concern at all, and we're just pouring money out as if it was going out of style. It really is. And, of course, eventually you get so much money that you begin to lose the value of the currency. Now, right now, we probably are running a 7-8% inflation, but, of course, if it starts getting much higher, well, it can really begin to erode the value of our currency. And all you need to do is certainly go to the store and look what's happening to the price of meat. Go to the store and look at the price of what's happening to the price of the standard products that you usually buy. Because the government simply lies about the rate of inflation. Why? Because that's what governments do. They lie to the people so they won't understand what happens until the very end. But the smart people are preparing for inflation. The smart people are getting out of the dollar into fixed assets. The Chinese have massive amounts of dollars. And what are they doing? They come into the United States and they're buying up property. They're buying up businesses. And they seem to be buying up everything that they can lay lay their hands on. If you have a question for James, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But is it true that the Chinese are buying up a lot of products, a lot of property in America? Are they doing the same thing throughout the world in Africa and South America?
Well, they are, and they're doing so in interesting ways. Of course, for China right now, with its economic still a boom, at least relative to the rest of the world, even if it is slowing down in recent years, they still need an incredible amount of raw materials and resources to back up that economic engine. So I think that they are very much, as a country, they are investing in resources and access to those resources through infrastructure projects and other such things, especially in Africa, where they have been investing heavily in recent years. But the Chinese people themselves, I think, are increasingly seeing the writing on the wall for the economic system. And that's, as I say, why we see record volume on the Shanghai Gold Exchange in recent days after the reopening of the markets after the New Year's holiday. Again, people are clamoring to get their hands on physical metal. And that's why people are still continuing to go there, and especially now that prices are falling in recent days, this is a prime buying opportunity for them. So I think that's where a lot of people in China are putting their savings at the moment, and I think that should tell us something. If these people aren't trusting in the U.S. stock market, if they're trusting more in the Shanghai Gold Exchange, what does that tell us about where things are heading?
Well, I think there are going to be an awful lot of Americans who are going to be very disturbed when the market crashes. I think a lot of people who are depending on pensions. And where are the pensions investing? Why, they're investing in the stock market. They're investing in bonds. And you destroy the value of the currency, and you will leave essentially 100 million people in America who thought they were comfortable. You'll leave them impoverished. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we have Tony calling us from West Virginia. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a comment and a question, I guess, Dr. Stan and Jim Corbett. I'm interested in the Federal Reserve Bank. Because so often it's thought of as held by the United States, the first bank or so, and I have a list of who the primary bankers are. And, you know, it's 57% controlled first by the Rothschild Bank of London and Berlin, second is Lazard Brothers Bank of Paris. There is Israel Moses Site Bank of Italy. Fourth is Warburg Bank of Hamburg and Amsterdam. Fifth is Lehman Brothers of New York. Sixth is Kuhn Lee Bank of New York. Seventh, Goldman Sachs, New York.
Well, Tony, we've heard this before, but James, is that really true? Who really holds the stock and owns the Federal Reserve Bank? We hear these stories. Are they true?
Well, isn't it telling in and of itself that this bank was founded in 1913, but the actual list of stakeholders was never made public? There's a lot of lists that float out there about 57% ownership of this and that, but again, some of those lists contradict each other, and I personally have no way of knowing which one is correct. I have no doubt that the Lazard brothers and Rothschilds and Warburgs are all involved in it. I just don't know the percentages, and I'm not sure exactly how to cross-check the different percentages that float around out there. But I think the key is that it is a secret system that was secretly founded in 1913 by way of deception and brought in for secret purposes. And that alone should tell the American people what the Federal Reserve is really about and who's it really profiting. And I think that's the biggest case that can be made for why in this 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve System, we need to abolish that system and get rid of this privately owned central bank that is dominating the American economy.
And I agree with that, Tony. Do you have a question, Tony?
Yeah, I have one more question, kind of comment.
Let's have a question because we do have other callers. But go ahead. What's your question?
The first banks that were held in the United States, the truth, they were held up until 1836 by the Rothschild First Bank and the Rothschild Second Bank of the United States.
No, these were not the bank. This was a central bank of the United States. It was not a Rothschild bank. It was the second bank. Maybe the Rothschild had holding in it. But if you can give me anything from the Federal Reserve that will verify what you're saying, I would love to see it. Do you have anything from the Federal Reserve that will verify that? about. Do you have anything from the Federal Reserve that will verify what you're saying?
Yeah, I can tell you where.
No. I want you to actually tell me where the listeners can get that from the Federal Reserve.
Okay. Well, what I'm reading is from a printout from, as he said.
From who?
Comes over from the comes over the computer.
Okay. Fine. Thanks very much. Let's go to Dave from Texas. Hi, Dave. Do you have a question or comment?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Good to talk to you again.
Okay, good. And if you're out there in the audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I'm sure that certainly the European central banks wanted the central bank in America. But people will tell you all these figures, but they all come in over the computer. You will never be able to get this from the Federal Reserve system because everything is done secretly. Would you agree with that, James?
Well, everything is done secretly. Of course, the First and Second Bank of the United States were central banks that were set up around the time of the founding of the Republic. They were actually finally put to rest by Andrew Jackson, who managed to make sure that their charter wasn't renewed. And he was also the president and the only president ever to fully pay off the debt of the United States, which is a pretty remarkable feat in and of itself. But since that time, of course, it's been the question of trying to get that central bank system reinstituted, which they managed to do in 1913 with the Federal Reserve. So it has been one giant history of basically the American people versus the banksters from Europe and the banksters in America as well.
And, of course, they tried to kill Andrew Jackson. But I really believe that's the most amazing thing. I do believe God intervened. Here was an assassin with two pistols. And what happened? They both misfired. How could something like that happen?
And Andrew Jackson ended up beating him with his own cane. So Andrew Jackson ended up beating the assailant with his cane. They had to pry him off of him.
Okay, but ladies and gentlemen, there are lots of things going on out there, but they're all secret, and people have all the information, but basically nobody is going to tell you the truth. Because we cannot let the American people understand that they're using the financial and military power of the United States today to bring about a one-world government and destroy Christianity. And that's the real purpose of everything going on today. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments and acknowledgement of God out of America. Dave, go ahead. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Dave, go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to talk to you. I have a question, a comment for your guest. Quick comment. I agree with your guest that we should abolish the Federal Reserve System. I personally think we should nationalize it. I think we should pull all Federal Reserve notes out of circulation and replace them with an equal number of equal value United States notes in their place. Upon completion of that, we should then put the backing of gold and silver and other assets if needed to complete the process to the new note and cancel out the debt with the old note.
Remember what happened to the last president who tried essentially to get away from issuing our money based upon
the... we know what happened.
Abraham Lincoln, of course, and they killed him. Why?
That was another example. But with Andrew Jackson, I was going to point out, you mentioned someone tried to assassinate him. Do you know one of the people who is believed to have been behind orchestrating the assassination attempt on Andrew Jackson was none other than his own vice president, John C. Calhoun. A lot of John C. Calhoun supporters aren't aware of.
That may very well be true. That may very well be true. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do have a question for your guest, for James. First of all, I want to appreciate him in picking up on where our friend, the late Bob Chapman, left off and trying to keep going with the international forecaster and the other activities he's involved in. I very much appreciate that, and I'm sure Bob would. My question is, if he believes someone's going to try to replace the dollar as a world reserve currency, what does he think they'll replace it with?
Well, that's very much up in the air at this point. I think that they're either going to move towards something like what we've been talking about in recent weeks here. We've been highlighting the idea of the woku, this basket of world currencies that is going to be used as the a type of stabilizing mechanism. Instead of having one currency, you put 20 or so of them into a basket, and that creates a more stable environment, or so the Woku supporters say. You also have the idea that that China is right now shoring up its central bank gold holdings in order to try to position the yuan as an international system. Whatever it is, I think it's still going to be the same system. It's just not going to be the power focus isn't going to be in Washington anymore, and the American people won't be able to rely on their treasury printing as much debt as they want and making sure that the rest of the world will hungrily buy it up. And that's a devastating thing for America, no matter really what system it's transitioned onto. And I think that's something that we have to have our eye on, because this is the way that the international banksters behind the scenes want it to work. Obviously, they don't care about America as a country. They don't care about the American people, and they don't have your best interests in mind.
Okay, anything else, Dave?
Yeah, quick observation, if I might. I agree with what your guest is saying, that the bankers are against us. I'm not sure they're going to be as successful in replacing the dollar, at least very quickly, as an alternative currency, because I'm not sure another system is ready to take its place, and it's so difficult. But my observation is going to be is with all the quantitative easing taking place of the European, Japanese, and central banks and the U.S. Federal Reserve, I believe they're buying their own bad debt off the market because they don't have anyone to buy it, and they're trying to prop up the system from imminent collapse. And I'm not sure they're going to succeed in avoiding that. And when a collapse, if it comes, I believe it may sweep the whole structure of the banker elite out from under them, and they may be unable to control world finance and affairs thereafter to anywhere near the extent they've wanted and tried to do previously, which is the one thing I hope does come out of it if there is a collapse, even though I don't wish a collapse. And ultimately, I think the people may be able to take back control economically from a kind of true market ground-up approach rather than from the elite down, top-down approach, if that happens that way.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much, David. I would simply comment that from what David said, that you have to understand that basically, if this happens and there's a collapse, why anybody who has any of their wealth tied up related to dollars, whether it be in pension funds or whether it be in insurance policy or whether it be in bonds, whether it be money in the bank, I mean, suddenly all of these things are going to be destroyed, and with that will come the impoverishment of the American people. This has happened time and time again throughout history, and the people who knew it was coming were prepared. People like John Paulson, who owns the largest hedge fund in the United States, is suddenly investing certainly in gold and gold stocks and other gold-related assets. He made countless billions of dollars, certainly, with the collapse in 2008. He's a pretty smart man, and I think we should see what he's doing. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But Dave, we've got Frank calling from Salinas. Hi, Frank. Do you have a question or comment?
Question. When, why, and how did the U.S. dollar become the global currency? And what was there before that for there was the global currency?
All right, that's an excellent question, James. Go ahead and answer it. When did America's currency become the global currency? And what was the global currency before the dollar was the currency?
International settlements were done by gold exchanges, gold holdings that were held in central bank holdings in the early part of the 20th century. That was the system, and that system started to break down with the world wars. And so, in the wake of World War II, we had the Bretton Woods Agreement, which brought into place the idea of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, and it was pegged at $35 to an ounce of gold. And this was the so-called gold standard. This was what was the basis of the entire international monetary system in the post-World War II period. And that was backed up by what was then the rising economic giant, industrial giant of America, basically the wealthiest nation that the world had ever seen. And so this tying of the U.S. dollar into gold was what backed that system up. But as you said earlier in the program, in the 1970s, Nixon unpegged the dollar from that $35 an ounce gold standard, and since that time, the dollar has still maintained the illusion that it is somehow the basis. It's backed up by something, when in fact it isn't. So they've managed to just basically turn on the printing presses, and people continue to buy dollars more through the threat of violence and coercion since the 1970s. The petrodollar paradigm has been maintained at the force of the barrel of the gun, and the wealthy sheikhs and the emirates in the Persian Gulf have been forced to purchase to basically value their oil in U.S. dollars. And that's been the paradigm for the last few decades. That paradigm is now starting to break down. And I think we're going to see a lot of violence and war as a result of the breakdown of this, because at the end of every cycle of this type of thing, we always see some sort of violence as a way of trying to renormalize or restabilize the world financial situation.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, I certainly agree with you, James, but before certainly the dollar became the dominant, Frank, the British pound was the major currency of the world, and certainly at one time, Great Britain ruled the waves. Now, of course, they've waived the rules, but at the one time they ruled the waves. They had the British Empire, and certainly the British pound was a stable currency that was used really for trade all throughout the world. There were certainly the Germans and the French had their currencies, but nothing really paralleled the British pound. And certainly, and then of course, the First World War actually destroyed the value of the British currency. They spent so much money on their military armaments, and it was the end of the First World War. Of course, they realized they were going to have to transfer the leadership of the world to the United States, and the small group that controlled England approached the small group that controlled America at that time and said, look, will you take over? And America gladly did. And certainly it was in transition period between World War One and World War Two. But World War Two simply bankrupted England, and they've never been certainly able to get back on their feet again. Would you agree or disagree with that, James?
That's exactly right. In the pre-World War One period, the world had been functioning on a gold exchange standard for decades, where there was convertibility of currencies into gold, and that basically a lot of the European countries went off of that in World War One because of the war and the need to finance the war. So they went off of that gold standard, and that's when inflation began. And of course, that's what we saw in Germany with the hyperinflation in the 1920s that led to the creation of the Third Reich. So I think we know where that history goes. And as a way to try to restabilize international relations, that's why the U.S. dollar was chosen as the world reserve currency and was pegged at $35 an ounce. So that's how that system came into being. But as we noted, it fell apart in the 1970s. And since then, we've basically been running on the good faith and credit of the respectable people in Congress in Washington. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, because basically at the end of the Second World War, that I think America had probably close to half of the gold in the world. I mean, certainly we were not hit by the war. We were not that badly affected by it. And we were holding massive gold holdings. And of course, for a time, why everybody rallied behind the dollar, and then gradually, little by little, but we undermined the very fabric of the gold system. Frank, does that answer your question?
Yes. That's a terrific answer. I think I understand a lot more than I did before.
All right. God bless, and thanks very much. Well, thank you very much, James. It's always a pleasure to have with us. You're with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for having me on.